Hey, hey, hey. Happy Wednesday, everybody. On today's show, we have a very dear friend, Mr. Sean Nunley, an incredible videographer, photographer, and just an all-around good human. Chris and I met Sean on Iration's 2019 summer tour, Live from Paradise. And since then, we've collected a bunch of cool memories, and I'm sure we're going to share some of those with you on today's episode. So let's start this thing. What's up, Sean? How you doing, man?
Oh, that was quite the intro. I appreciate that.
A man of many hats.
Wearing a hat currently.
Yes.
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me on. It's my first podcast ever, so
we're honored. Holy shit.
I'm gonna blunder through it and see how well it goes.
Welcome to Stage Right, brother. How you feeling?
I love the name, by the way. I'm doing good. By the way, I love the name. I was talking to my dad about it last night and just kind of explaining what you guys do and all that stuff. And he was just like, the name is perfect for this.
Fuck yeah.
Well, so Sean, I've never really sat down and talked about your beginnings or even about anything deep in your life. Like, I feel like I know you pretty well, but it's a very different experience to be on a podcast and like interview about how you got started in this world. So can you tell us your like origin story in the touring world? Cause you've done some amazing things.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's kind of interesting because I haven't even really sat down like officially and discussed this with anyone. I mean, I've like, you know, told my family or like my friends a couple times, but yeah, I guess we could probably just start way back at the beginning, huh?
Let's dive in.
Okay. Yeah. So I guess it started a long, long time ago. I'm turning 30 in April.
Was it in a galaxy far, far away?
Yeah. Oh man, far. Dude, it's so far that I forget that I'm actually turning 30.
welcome to the club, brother.
Welcome to the big leagues, brother. But it probably started like, you know, back when I was a child. You know, my mom is very into movies and music. And so growing up, she was always showing me, you know, her favorite artists. And, you know, every year it was like a big thing watching award shows like the Grammys or the Oscars. And, you know, she kind of got me interested in filmmaking from a very early age. And, you know, ever since then, I kind of just thought like, wow, it'd be really cool to be a filmmaker. And over the course of years, like through middle school and high school, I had a group of friends and we would just literally probably not pay attention at all during class and instead draw and write little stories. Like, did you guys ever get a thing called an Alpha Smart? Do you remember those?
No, but I always fucking drew in class all the time.
It's the only way to get through school, honestly. But there's these like things called Alpha Smarts and they were like before, like, I mean, there was like old laptops back in like, I don't know, it was like 2000, but they had these things called Alpha Smarts and they were like these weird, like stripped down versions of a laptop. So they had like a keyboard and like this weird little screen that you could see what you're typing. And we'd write all these stories out and like pass them back and forth in class. And so like from like then it was just like, I pretty much was always creating something with my friends. And throughout high school, we'd make like little short films. And then I went off to college in Santa Barbara, City College. And I intended on studying film. But then I just like ended up partying a lot with my friends and stuff and doing the same thing I pretty much did all throughout school. I just didn't really, school never really worked or flowed with me, just the way it was kind of set up. And especially like they didn't really have the right kind of film program for me at City College and especially at UCSB. So I ended up just dropping out. And at that point I'm kind of like, you know, oh, well, shit, what am I going to do with my life if I'm not going to school, you know? And you know, I'm thinking to myself, well, maybe it's time for me to actually like really dive into this, journey of like filmmaking on my own, you know, cause my friends were off at different colleges and stuff. So I ended up like begging my parents to get me a camera. And it's like, you can imagine how hard that would be after that. I'm like, hey, like I just stopped going to school, but like, you know, like want to give me this camera. And I ended up convincing them like, and it's like something I would tell a lot of people, honestly, like, you know, I was fortunate enough to have my parents help me through school with financially, but I kind of was able to turn that by saying like, hey, like, why don't we take the finances? You can save a ton of money, not pay for the schooling and just buy me a camera and maybe like a light for the camera or whatever. Yeah. It's gonna be like a way cheaper investment. And I promise you, I will do something with this. And it's like, they're like, they were just like blown away by that. And they were not happy at first, but I eventually, you know, they helped me out with it.
That's amazing, man. Cause I mean, society tells you like, you have to go to school, get some piece of paper and like, then you can be successful. Then you can get a job, but it's not really like that anymore.
Yeah. And I'm glad you can recognize that. Cause it, sometimes it feels weird saying that, you know, and I, like I said, I am very fortunate. I know a lot of people have to put themselves through school. So I was like really fortunate from the get-go to have that. And I'm also very fortunate that my parents took a chance on me because, man, it's like, who knows? I could have just like given up on that too. And it's like, I'd be stuck in the same situation, no schooling. And it's like, what am I going to do with my life? But I knew kind of the end goal was to do this. And that's kind of what drove me to like never stop was like, if I don't have a degree, well, I don't have anything else at the moment. I have to do this or else like I'm going to be like flipping burgers or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, it was like a kind of a slow start because I got my camera and, you know, you have to learn just like I'm sure tons of musicians do, right? You know, you got to learn the chords, you got to learn, or you guys, you know, it's like you got to learn how to work with all that equipment up on stage. And so it took years of me just like, I started with photography. I would just do landscape photography, which is, or like astrophotography is one of my favorite things to do. And yeah, for a while I was just kind of like taking pictures, smoking weed and taking pictures. And like, it was really fun. It was like, it was a total, just like a blissful thing to do without any money or like any, like no pressure of like, get this done, you know?
That was my childhood was I would just drive and I was like 16, smoke weed and take pictures. I would just go drive and find photo spots and it was amazing. I loved it.
I had a totally different 16-year-old experience. I was like playing punk shows and getting kicked out of fucking venues and band and
that's awesome.
Yeah.
I was alone in a car just driving through like
that's awesome. Well, yeah, like I said, I was just kind of just smoking weed and taking pictures for the most part. And then, you know, I started thinking to myself like I have the camera now. I gotta fulfill my obligation and promise to my parents on this. And I got lucky because I ended up living above these musicians and they were like playing backyard parties at like in Isla Vista. And they went by the band name, the Fire Department. And yeah, cause a lot of them were from Oakland, California. So it was like, you know, fire weed. It was kind of like a gimmicky little thing, but it was like, it was great at the same time, you know?
Oh, that's great. That's
yeah. Funny. Yeah. But they were like, I honestly recognized from the moment I saw them play, like they were some of the best musicians I've ever seen play, especially at our age, you know, just for like dudes who are like drinking beer and playing college parties in Isla Vista. And so I lived above them and I ended up moving out of that house. But before I moved out, the drummer came up to me, his name was Evan. And he was like, dude, you got to like take that camera and you got to like, you should be our photographer and take pictures for us. And I was like, yeah, man, that sounds awesome. And so for like the next year, the last year that I lived in Isla Vista, I just started taking pictures for them at any house party they'd play or like they'd go out to bars. There's a classic story, like Lompoc. And I don't remember the bar name, but like, man, it was just like, it was gnarly. It was like this dive bar in Lompoc. And we see this like, you know, we're loading all the gear because I'd help them load gear into the back or into the bar and stuff. And as we're doing that, this woman comes out and she points at my buddy Kevin, the guitar player. And she's like, you look like you're young, dumb, and full of cum. And she's like, he's like, oh, we're all just like cracking up, right? And she's just like this haggard lady. And 5 minutes later, she's being like pulled out on a stretcher by an EMTs because she like overdosed or something. It was just really gnarly.
Wow. Holy shit.
Yeah. So it was like doing things like that. And like, you know, it's all for free and it was all for fun. You know, they're trying to make it as musicians. And then I'm just, you know, taking pictures with them.
Getting
trying to
experience.
Make it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And it was just like a perfect synergy thing. We all just kind of were doing it together. And then they graduated from UCSB and they were, you know, their next move was to continue the music stuff. And so the singer, his parents had a house in Ojai that they were willing to rent to us. And so we ended up going out to this house in Ojai and it was like the 7-acre orange orchard. And that's kind of like where, like, I think things really took off in a way for me, like in terms of me getting better, not professionally yet, but like I was with these guys every day. And it was just like, I had just finished watching Entourage, the show Entourage. And so I was like, man, like, it's just going to be a bunch of us together, like following this dream. And we basically did that. Like every day we woke up, they were always playing music, trying to get better, writing songs, booking shows. And I was just documenting everything. And that's when I started really going into video and like documenting stuff versus, you know, just doing it with still frames. Yeah. So basically Ojai, spent about a year and a half out there and just, you know, I worked with them getting better, like kind of honing my craft. And then we all moved back to Santa Barbara after that. And the band kind of changed. The lead singer kind of went off. He wasn't really working well with the group. And so they changed the dynamic into just the core band and changed their name to Layover. And same thing, we moved to Santa Barbara and just like had seriously the best time of our lives, just like going to the bars, playing shows, and again, honing our craft. And then it kind of got to a point where I was like, man, I really have to figure out what I'm doing here. Because again, remember, my whole goal is to like become a filmmaker. And, you know, at a certain point, I'm like, I'm not doing that professionally. And I just started cold calling, like sending emails out to any tour manager I could find and just being like, yo, let me get some tickets and I'll come in there and shoot your show for you and you can have everything. And no one responded for like months. And finally, it was Stick Figure.
No shit.
Yeah, it was like Stick Figure's tour manager was just like, yeah, here's some tickets, like come just give us the photos or whatever. And I was like super, super pumped on that.
That's crazy.
Yeah, no, it was cool, man. I was really pumped on it because I obviously listened to their music. And yeah, I was like, you know, I was like nervous and stuff because to me it felt like the first real step into working professionally, mm-hmm. even though I wasn't getting paid. But it was really cool learning experience, and I took photos and they really liked them. And nothing really happened from there except for the guy who owned the promoting company who was booking these shows through the club. I ended up getting another, I forget the group it was, but this guy, electronic artist named Branches, and his tour manager brought me out, same thing, a Stick Figure, and I took photos and stuff. But this time I brought my GoPro with me and filmed like just this recap. And back then Instagram only allowed like 15 second recap kind of stuff. And so I just made this like super quick cut thing off a GoPro, and it was like really low quality, but like it caught the attention of the promoter. And he was like, dude, like that captured the energy of the show. Like we need that. Like, do you want to come shoot? Like you shoot every weekend for whatever like artists we bring in. And he's like, I'll pay you like $100 a show. And I was like, yes, dude, like that's
let's
awesome.
Go.
Yeah, I was like, I was so pumped off that. So that's what happened. Like, I basically started working for him, and then his company was going up. It was called We the Beat, and so he was booking bigger and bigger artists, like really cool people. Like, eventually, during the Coachella weekends, he got of 2016, he got Rufus Du Sol and Unknown Mortal Orchestra to stop through, and that was like at the time the biggest shows that I ever did. And so that was really cool, and that's what really, by then I had like upgraded my camera gear to like the Sony a7s2, which is what I'm shooting on now, and like all the recaps got better and better quality. And just I was pretty much studying every day different people's stuff, like Rory Kramer, Sam Colder, Montana Martz, all those kind of people, and just like eating up all this information on how to make better and better recaps. And then I think up until that point, like Rufus Du Sol was like kind of the biggest, you know, act I had shot. And again, you know, I was getting paid to do this stuff. And even though it wasn't that much, it just really felt like I was finally doing something. And I was still like, you know, cold calling managers and tour managers. And I think, you know, I have a pretty good story actually about that. So like a couple of times I'd get these, like, I'd see these big artists come through this club named Velvet Jones. And one of the guys was T-Pain. And I'm just like, I knew the promoter there too. And I was just begging her to let me in, like, please let me just come shoot the show. I'll give you all the photos. Like, I just waited outside the club for like hours because it was sold out. And like, I was like, not going to leave until this lady let me in to shoot the show. And she like, I just like, not in like a mean way, but I kept bugging her. And, you know, because I was like trying to walk the fine line of being too annoying, but also being like hustling. And I was just like begging her to let me in. And she finally let me in. And I like just weaseled my way into the green room, like backstage somehow. I don't know how I did it, but I ended up back there. Like I was back there and there was a meet and greet going on with T-Pain. And, you know, the security's all kind of looking at me like, who's this dude with the camera and stuff? And I'm kind of like, I'm supposed to be here, you know, like whatever. And I'm like waiting patiently for the meet and greet to happen. And then finally at the very end, T-Pain looks at me and he's like, what's up, man? I'm like, yo, like T-Pain, can I get a photo? And I'm going to pause right there because I had this horrible habit for some reason back in the day of like, I was always worried about my camera batteries dying. I don't know why. It's like, and I had extra camera batteries, but like, it was like this weird mental thing I had, like, oh, my camera's going
to
die.
It's
like,
good ethic to have, man. Yeah. Battery conscious.
I thought so at least. Like, so I'd always be turning my camera off and on. And so I go to T-Pain and I'm like, yo, T-Pain, let me get a photo. And he's like, hell yeah, man. He does this sick pose and I raise the camera up and I'm clicking the button and nothing's happening. And I'm like,
Oh, wait,
my camera's off. And he goes, oh man, get the fuck out of here. And like,
Oh man.
And all his boys, dude, like he had like his whole like squad in the back. They all just hopped up off this chair they were sitting on and they were just like clowning me so hard. They were just like, oh, you got fucking owned. Like, and I'm just I'm like so just like embarrassed. Like, and I just like, I left like, cause like, you know, obviously T-Pain tells you to get the fuck out of there. Like,
yeah, what else are you gonna do?
You're getting the fuck out of there.
Yeah. And so I left, dude, and I was just like, man, I was so bummed. But I was like in my head, I was like, damn, dude, I gotta get that photo. I have to do it. And so I waited around after the show and I remember like this, the DJ, like the guy who was like open for him was like, yo, dude, I saw you take pictures of me earlier. And I was like, yeah. I was like, dude, I will give you those photos for free if you get me backstage. Cause he was moving all his gear backstage again. And he was like, come with me real quick and like, help me carry like my gear out. Cause like the security wouldn't let me back there anymore. Like I already tried. And like, he was like, yeah, help carry my gear out with me and you can get back there. And so I'm like hustling this gear with him and the security guard's like, yo, what are you doing, man? He's like, he's with me. And I end up back there and like T-Pain just sees me and I'm like, oh no, like he knows. And like, I just look at him and he's like being mobbed with people taking pictures. And I just like, the guy at the DJ was like, yo, I got you, man. Like, and he puts the gear down. He's like, T-Pain, let's get a picture real quick. And like, wow. T-Pain's like, oh yeah, for sure, man. And like, so I get a picture of them and then that guy leaves and I just was like, yo, T-Pain. And I just, boom, I got it. I got that picture. And like, it's like, it's weird. Cause like, it started off all like, not the best, you know, but like I ended up getting the picture. And it's like a funny story because it's like I got...
Holy shit.
That's amazing, man. Yeah, that's because of your attitude. You just didn't go home and go away. You were like, no, I want to get this fucking picture, man.
Yeah. And it's like, it ends up being... I think that's like advice for anybody who's like looking to do this stuff is like, nothing's like easy with anything in life. You know, yeah. Anything that you want to do that's worth doing is going to be hard and sometimes horrible. But, you know, it's all about just like not saying you're going to go home with your tail between your legs and like, you ain't gonna let T-Pain kick you out. You're going to get back in there and you're going to get that T-Pain photo.
That's definitely,
you're going to get what you came for, man. Yeah.
Definitely some takeaways from Sean and his personality is don't give up and be a good guy.
Yeah.
One of my favorite Sean stories is Los and I had just bought our new drones and I didn't know how to fly a drone. And Sean clearly does because he flies drones all the time.
Well, except also, that one time in the cow field.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that story. And when you crash into a tree in front of that little girl on the beach, we'll talk about that one too.
Oh my God, yeah, we'll get to that.
We'll get to that, yeah. So we were playing this gig at an amphitheater and I put my drone up and stupidly didn't check my phone battery and my phone died. So the drone was just sitting up there, just stuck in the sky. And then it started getting low and went to start auto landing. And I didn't know what to do. So I ran to the bus. Got Sean. And Sean, being the amazing man that he is, it was trying to land on like the diagonal side of a tent and it was going to fall like 100 feet or I don't know how far. Sean, in like flip-flops, climbs a fence, jumps on top of the tent and grabs my drone out of the sky and saves it. And I was like, and he got hurt too. And I was like, holy shit, that's a friend right there.
Dude, I've seen my drone crash personally like three times, four times. maybe five times actually. And I'm not going to let that happen to a friend's drone, man.
Speaking of drone crashes, let's talk about the time that you, number one, crashed in a cow field and we had to walk through a herd of cows to get your drone back. And number two,
on the first day of tour, also.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah. Oh, man. I was like, what was that? Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had just come back. You guys were still on the road and I had taken a break and come back. And it was like the first day back. Or actually, no, it was like the first official day back of tour, wasn't it? For everybody. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I arrive and I'm like so pumped to be back with everybody. And like, as it is, I think a lot of people picture like when you're working these events, it's just like a party the entire time. But it's like, it's generally like a lot of setup and a lot of just like sitting around waiting for the actual show.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm just like sitting backstage, super bored. And I'm like, you know what? I bought this drone and because I've crashed it before, so I don't like to fly it. Unless I'm working or like for a real reason. But I was just like, man, I'm bored. I'm going to go fly my drone around. It's like, there's the first mistake right there. Cause I'm like, you know, just bored. And so I go out and I don't really like, you know, I'm not like really, I just take the thing off and flying around and like, what? I think were you both of you there for this or
no,
Tony was there.
It was Tony and I. And also let's clarify this. Sean was trying to chase cows in a field with his drone. That was the biggest mistake.
So I take it off and it's like we're like looking around and it's like, what is that big old like gnarly looking puddle out there? Like it's like a big lake looking like red brown looking lake, and we're flying over there and it's like there's just like this herd of cows, and I'm like, that's a great shot. Like I don't care who you are, like let's go buzz the cows.
I'm East Cow Shepherd.
Yeah. Let's go shepherd some cows. And I'm like flying and it's like really cool. But then I think like, I forget what happened, but like something happened and I just pulled the drone up. And as I pulled it up, it just gets obliterated. Like, just like almost like karma, like the hand of God just being like, nope, boom. And just smacking that thing out of the sky. And I'm like, oh no. Like I could see the camera still on and everything. So I'm like, okay, like, maybe it's not like completely destroyed, but then like, you know, you see the cows now they're kind of like, yo, what the fuck, man? And they're kind of like pacing around trying to see what this thing is that just like flew into the middle of their herd. And I'm like, we're like watching this whole thing on the thing. We like ended up, I was like, fuck, I have to get this thing. It's like $1,400. Like, I'm not going to leave it out there. I'm like, who's going to come with me on this? And it's like, of course, Chris and Tony, they're down. And I was in some flip-flops again. We're cruising definitely into this, you know, guy's property. So it's like Oklahoma, you know, not too strict of gun laws out there. And I'm pretty sure it's like you put a toe on my property, you're going to get shot.
And of course, at this point, the cows are stampeding back and forth where we think the drone is, like just going up the hill. Down the hill, up the hill.
Yeah, and we're watching it on the, because you can see it on the camera still. So it's like, and they're getting closer and closer to the thing. I'm like, dude, one of these guys are just going to just mangle this drone before I can get it. And we're just going through there. And I'm like, just at this point, realize that I'm like ankle deep in cow shit in flip-flops.
Well, hold on. There's a different part to this story, all right?
Yeah, so you got to help remind me of some of these things.
Tony, we'll find this video and post it on our Instagram. But Tony whips out his camera just to document the moment. And Sean turns back to talk to the camera like, hey, we're out here looking for my drone. Fuck! It steps just straight in a pile of cow shit and flip-flops.
That was a first for me. That was definitely a first.
And of course, the worst part is you had a cut and you got a cow hair out of the pile of shit stuck.
Yeah, we ended up getting the drone and it was all good and fine and funny, except the drone was broken, which is another story. But, you know, I bring it back and it ensues of like weeks and weeks of trying to fix this drone because the gimbal cable had snapped.
And you and I took that thing apart, I don't know how many times. We took that apart, like, it felt like for weeks, every morning we were like in the green room, like pulling that thing apart.
I got like Chris and Peeps. I'm like, you guys got the tools for this. And they got these little micro screwdrivers and they're just like pulling it apart. And Peeps is a busy, busy man. And I'm like looking at him the whole time. Cause like at a certain point, Chris kind of threw his hands up and he's like, I don't know what to tell you about this dude. Like I, you know, we've tried a bunch of Peeps. He's like, I'll give it a shot. And so like for like a week or two, I'm waiting for Peeps and I don't want to bother him. And then one night he's just like 10 beers deep, 3 a.m. He's like, where's that fucking drone?
Classic Peep story, man.
And I'm like, I don't know. Should you be like, you're like kind of drunk right now? Like, should you be like doing like fine machinery kind of stuff? Where's that fucking drone?
It's when he does his best work. That's what.
It's the best time for him to do it. And he actually ended up fixing it that night for a while until it like it just ended up breaking again. But yes, the cow
classic
hair.
Peeps again.
Back to the cow hair.
Yeah, the cow hair. I like a week later, I had developed this limp. And I was limping around the stage, just really miserably.
As one does like, when one develops a limp.
A limp. It's my first limp, though, so I didn't know how to handle it. But everyone was noticing. They were like, are you good, dude? And I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, I can't
walk.
Oh,
this limp? No. I've been meaning to do this. It's my new thing.
Oh, you noticed this?
Oh, you noticed that? Wow. So
glad
sweet
glad someone's
of you.
Paying attention around here.
They love me.
But I'm limping and Tony goes, dude, you probably have a hair splinter. And I'm like, a what? And he's like, a hair splinter. And I'm like, get the fuck out of here, dude. You're telling me a hair is splintered into my foot right now? And he's like, dude, it happens. Like, they're really sharp and he's like, especially cow hairs, they're super like tough. And I was like, nah, dude. And so for like a day or two, I'm just like, this'll go away. And like, it's not going away. And it got to the point where we were in some god-awful place where it was like 100 degrees in the shade. And as my uncle likes to say, that sun was leaning on you, boy. It was hot. And I'm like limping so hard. And Chris is pushing me around in like a wheelie chair because I can't even walk. And Tony's like, dude, we got to get this hair out of your foot. And I'm like, all right, fine. Let's see what you're talking about. And I look in there. And under this blister that had formed is a fucking hair. And I'm just looking at Tony like, dude, I didn't know this was like a thing. And so he like gets his like this knife out and we just operated on my toe in the parking lot of this venue. And we have a video of it. Sliced my toe open and pulled this cow hair out of my toe. And like instantly I was just like, oh, that was it. I feel so much better.
Wow.
And that was it. And that was the first time I'd ever gotten a hair splinter. And within a year, it happened 2 times. Weirdest thing of my life.
Holy shit, man.
It's those flip-flops, man.
The hair splinters, they're a real thing. They're a real thing.
Tony saved your life. And your toe.
Yeah. You know, you'd think it's like when you're on tour, it's like there's so many things that could kill you or go wrong, but it's really the hair splinters.
It's the cow shit.
You never think it's a cow that's gonna do the job.
So kids, don't chase cows with your drone.
Lesson learned.
And don't go traipsing through a cow field in your flip-flops.
All right, on to the next story we have to have is when you crashed your Phantom on the beach, trying to show off to a little girl.
Oh my God. Well, this actually kind of segues back into my origin story. And that's like, I was like, at my point in my starting career thing, I was like, I'm going to get a drone. And my buddy was like, yo, dude, like you should just, because I had the money for it. I saved up. And he was like, dude, let's put it on my credit card. And like, I'll get points for it. And I was like, okay, sure. Like, why? I don't know why. But he bought the drone for me on his credit card and it came for his Amazon account. And I was off doing this really shitty gig, which we don't have time to explain in this podcast. If you guys have me on again, I'll explain this gig to you. But he sends me a picture of his balls on my drone package when it arrived. And I was like,
classic.
Come on, man. But this is how I got my first Phantom. He was like, you know, here's your Phantom. Here's my balls. And I rushed home, not for the balls, but definitely for the Phantom. And I get it. And I'm setting it up. And I'm so stoked. And back then, it didn't just come from DJI like, yo, here's your drone. Go fly it off. Like, I had to, like, set it up and, like, this weird wiring stuff to connect the compass and everything. And I spent hours doing this. And finally, I'm like, time to fly this thing. And I take it down to East Beach in Santa Barbara. And there's, like, if you've ever been to that part of Santa Barbara, there's like palm trees that line the beach. And I'm like,
I didn't know this was your first day with the drone.
It was like my first or second. I think I took it off in the parking lot. I think I took it off in like the parking lot of my apartment. And then the next day I went down there. So it was like my second day. And, But it was like, it came natural to me because I've been playing video games my whole life. Like, it really truly came naturally to me to fly this thing. And that's the problem. Because like, with anything that comes naturally to people immediately, you fucking hurt yourself or hurt somebody or something. And I like, and the reason I say that is because like, when I got on a dirt bike the first couple times, I was like, oh, I got this. And I nearly broke my neck. And ever since then, it taught me like, don't be a little cocky asshole with things that you think. But apparently I didn't learn because I take this drone off and I'm flying around. I'm like, dude, this is just so amazing. And my buddy shows up like right at the end of the battery dying and I'm landing this thing. And back then their battery systems were like, they could be super unstable, especially if they were around like the 15% area. Like you just had to land them. And I land it and this mom and her daughter come by and they're like, oh my God, is that a drone? And I'm like, yeah. Cause like back then, this is when drones were just starting and everybody was like, whoa, what is that? Like, and she's like, that's so cool. I've never seen one. Like, could you take it off? I'd love to see it fly. And in my head, I'm like, don't do that, dude. You know, like, don't do that. But I'm like, yeah, sure. Let me, I was like, I'll just take it off real quick. And like, this is like the first time I learned this lesson. I take it off and I take it straight up in the air. I don't even fly it anywhere cause I know it's at like 10% battery. And so it's hovering like about 100 feet in the air, or at least like palm tree height. I think that's gotta be like 75 feet or something. I don't know what it is. Don't quote me on that. But it's hovering and she's just talking to me like, oh my God, like drone, cool, drone. And I'm like, I just got distracted. I stopped paying attention to the drone and I'm talking to her about how this thing flies or whatever. And all of a sudden I just hear this and I'm like, what is that? And I look and the drone is just flying off towards the palm trees. And I'm like looking at the control sticks like, I'm not doing that. Why is this doing this? And I'm yanking on the controls and it's gone, man. It's going on its own. And it just plows into this palm tree and just day two watching this drone come tumbling back down to the earth and it just and plastic parts everywhere, all over the place.
Oh, man.
And this woman and her daughter turned to me and they know like immediately that they're the reason why this happened because I had landed this thing and was about to go home. And they're like, please, like, take the drone off. And she just goes, wow, so that's really cool. And then she just walks away. And I'm like, it was the most awkward thing. Like,
yeah, like, what do you say after that, you know?
Yeah, because, like, she just watched, like, my face. When I saw it hit the ground, she knew there was no turning back. Like, that thing was toast. And I was just, like, this look of disbelief. And she was like, super cool. Thanks for showing us. Bye. But then the cool thing is the drone lived, actually, which is really weird. It lived, and all I had to do was buy a new gimbal. And so I did and took it back out to the mountains with my buddy. And my buddy was a geologist. So he's the guy in the band. He's the drummer. And he was a geologist, and he just, like, loved to go on the craziest hikes and, like, drink a bunch of whiskey. And, like, we all did. And so, like, right before we go on this mountaintop hike, he hands me this dog bowl. I'm not even kidding you. It's a dog bowl for dogs to drink out of, full of whiskey. And he's like, drink it. And I'm like, yeah, great. Great idea. Elevation, dog bowl of whiskey. Let's do it. And I drink this dog bowl of whiskey. And we hike for hours up to the top of this mountain. And I'm hammered. And I get the drone out, brand new fixed drone. And I don't check anything on it because I'm hammered. And I just take the thing off. And it's flying all funky. And I'm like, why is it flying like that? Well, it's because I didn't check. Back then, you had to calibrate a lot of stuff before. It's not like the fan or the Mavericks these days where you just like put it up and it's like good to go. And so I'm like, oh, I didn't put the compass setting or GPS or something. So I'm like trying to land it. And he's like, dude, just land it in my hands. I'll catch it. And I'm like, no, I'm going to land this thing on a mountaintop. He's like, landing in my hands, dude. I'm like, shut the fuck up. And I just, I bring this thing down and it just bounces. And it's just bouncing. I'm like, I got this. And it's not like landing. And it just bounce, boom, right off the cliff. And it just, we had spent hours getting to the top of this. And within 30 seconds, I'm not even kidding you, we got to the top 30 seconds. I was flying this thing after hours of hiking. And now I'm watching it and we're all just quiet. And it's just making this awful sound going down this mountainside, like, and just echoing further and getting quieter and quieter. And I'm just like, well, fuck. I had to go all the way down there and get it. And the only thing that survived was the GoPro. So testament to GoPros. Those things are like brick shit houses, man. They'll live.
I don't know why I've ever let you fly a drone around me.
Dude, the thing is like, I'm good at piloting it. It's just that like it's the confidence thing, man. And that's why you know what I did with it? I went all the way down to the bottom of the mountain, got that thing, picked it back up. And when I got home, I put it back in its little box. I buried that fucker in its little box and I put it above my bed. I had this like shelf above my bed and I left it there. So every day I walked in my room, I looked at that broken drone and I thought to myself, next drone you get, don't do that again.
And then you went and chased cows.
And then I went and crashed in the cow field.
Hey, man. That lesson's going to keep coming back until you fucking learn it. You know what I mean?
Whatever you got to do, Ricky.
Until it's too devastating to recover from.
Oh, my God. Well, fuck, let's talk a little bit about your career now, because you've worked with a lot of huge and amazing artists you've been on PJs, been in stadiums, worked with Marshmello. How has that been? How does that feel to have, come to that point from such humble beginnings?
Yeah, dude. Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, it kind of just happened after Santa Barbara. Like I said, I was working those club shows and I ended up started working with Iration. Eventually, Xavier got back to me after an email I sent and I started working with them. And that was the first paid big artist that I worked with officially. And it was really cool to get, kind of cut my teeth working these big shows. The first thing we did was some Long Beach show and it was 10,000 people in the crowd. I was blown away. It was the coolest thing I've ever seen. And kind of from there, I ended up working with them. And I think the craziest thing I always tell people is even then I always felt like I was never going to this never was going to happen for me. I'd never was going to get the super, super big break I'm looking for. And what happened one day was I was in a club working the show for FKJ and there was this guy in there named V and he was just basically the runner for FKJ. He would drive around and, get food and stuff for him and take him places wherever he wanted to go. And they were all fucking around backstage and he was catching a strawberry in his mouth. And I took a picture of him catching the strawberry and he was like, "Oh dude, I love that picture. Can I get that?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure. Whatever." Didn't know the guy. I just sent him the picture the next day. And from then he just added me on Facebook and Instagram. And a few months later I see he's working with Marshmello and Slushy. And I was like, "What?" And I just was like, "Dude, that's crazy." And so I just hit him up. And I think a mistake people do sometimes is they see people doing things like that and they kind of rudely expect you to hook it up for them. And it's I didn't want that for him. I thought he was a cool dude. So I honestly just hit him up and was like, "Yo, let me pick your brain. How did you end up working with Marshmello?" And he, what's really cool is he ended up putting my name forward to work at a company called Red Light Management. It was just crazy because he put my name forward to work with this artist named Brills. And they hit me up and they're like, "Yeah, we want you to come work with Brills." And I was like, "Oh my God, this is it. I'm going to be touring officially." And then I jumped the gun. I called my mom and dad and I was like, "I did it. Remember that camera? It happened." And they were like, "Oh my God." And then an hour later, they're like, "Oh, we don't want you. We actually found somebody else." And I was like, "Oh my fucking God, dude."
Wow. Well, that's a good lesson to learn early.
Yeah. Don't jump the shark. And, I did. And so I was super depressed for the rest of that month. And I was I just was like, "Dude, this isn't going to happen." And I was also working at a call center at the time as a telemarketer. And so I was literally like, "Dude, fuck, I'm going to be a telemarketer for the rest of my life." And then all of a sudden one night I'm at a bar, my buddy's doing an open mic and I just get this email at 9 PM and it's from this manager. And it was this manager named Brandon at Red Light. And he was "Hey man, my buddy V put your name forward to be a creative director for us. Do you want to do an interview? We're interested in interviewing you and seeing if you'd be a fit for the position." And I'm just looking at this email in a bar and I'm like, "What?" I didn't even really know what Red Light was at the time. So I was kind of like, "What the hell?" And I showed it to my buddies who were musicians and they were like, "Dude, that's huge. You should definitely take that." And I was like, "Oh." So I said yes, and I ended up doing some interview stuff with them, and they liked me, and they sent me out on a tour or a quick like New Year's Eve run with Brills, the same guy that I was supposed to work with that they didn't actually get me for. And I ended up like kind of fucking it up because they had me TM, which is really weird.
Ooh.
They had me TM, do photo and video. So I was just like, I have no idea what any of that like TMing stuff is, but it was too much. But like I ended up nailing it in terms of the video and photo stuff for him. And I got hired. And then from there, it basically, yeah, it was like a really cool journey of like, I ended up working on Sunset Boulevard in the office for the EDM department. And I became the head video photo person for the EDM roster that they had, which included, you know, people like Borgor, Marshmallow. Eventually we got, you know, people like Hayden James. And there's like, one of my favorite people to work with is this young kid named Pluko. And we signed him when he was like 16 years old. And he's just like one of the hardest working, coolest dudes ever. But it was really cool because I got to work with all these people that I had dreamed of working with. And suddenly I'm like, you know, touring with them, hanging out with them and shooting these big shows like EDC, like some of the crowds I think they had at some of those stages were like 70,000 people. And it was just like, it was mind blowing being up there and like all the, you know, all the fire and the fireworks and CO2 cannons and stuff. But yeah, I ended up working at Red Light for like 2.5 years. And then towards the end, I talked with Marshmallow's day-to-day manager, and they had just had a falling out with one of their photographers. And she was like talking, cause I was working on another music video for one of their clients. And she just in passing mentioned like, oh, who are we going to have like photograph Marshmallow this weekend? I was like, I could do it.
It's like, hey, what's up right here?
And she was like, really? And I was like, what do you mean? Really? Like, yeah, of course I will. Yeah. I was like trying to be all cool about it. Like, yeah, I mean, yeah, like I could do it, I guess. Like,
I mean, sure, I'm pretty busy, but you know.
Yeah. I was like, maybe, I guess I'll see. But I was like, no, I was like, yeah, of course I'll do it. Like, and so I ended up doing like a test run with him. And then, you know, they liked what I did. And so I ended up working with him for a little bit. And eventually just kind of didn't work out in terms of like what I was expecting for payment and what they were kind of expecting on payment. So we kind of just split ways on that. And it's like, I was kind of bummed about it because I was like, man, that's like, it's a huge act. And it was like really cool working with him because, you know, yeah, you got on the private jets. You got to go hang out with like celebrity people. It was like, you know, we went to Park City for Sundance, and it's like hanging out in a nightclub with Jeezy and stuff. And it was cool, but it was like a really fast paced, like kind of over the top lifestyle. And eventually, you know, I was kind of bummed that I was like, did I mess this up? Should I have been, you know, should I just have taken what I could have gotten? But it was really cool because I got to link back up with Iration again. Mm-hmm. And I just saw that Adam was going on tour. He was like, oh, going on like 2 month summer tour. And I was like, yo, dude, like, I'm not really working with anyone at the moment. Like, can I shoot a couple of your shows? And he goes, I'll get back to you. And then like all of a sudden Michael reaches out to me. He's like, yeah, we want you for like the whole summer tour. And I was like, oh, that's like, oh geez. Like I was just thinking like a couple shows, like, cause at that point I was kind of just like, I was like out of it. Like I was like scared to commit to anything for some reason. And he was like whole summer tour. And I was like, oh, that's like, seems like a lot. And then I was like, no, I got to do this. And it ended up being, that's how I know all you guys now. And it's just like,
yeah,
it all works out for the right reasons, you know.
Wow, that's awesome.
That was an amazing tour too.
Oh, dude,
it really
that was like, I mean, between the cow fields and you know the hair on my foot, and then there was the flesh eating bacteria going around in Florida. Remember that?
Yep.
Yep. Classic 2019.
And then Catastro, our day off in Seattle. Good times.
Oh,
good
man, times. That day off in Seattle was just epic. So cool.
That was probably one of my favorite days.
Dude, one of my favorite days off too is Seattle. It's not that one, but there's been some great days off in Seattle.
Yeah, we've had some good days off in Seattle and Chicago on tour. Seems like it always works out that way.
Oh my God, do you remember in Chicago when I almost got like jumped by that crackhead?
Oh, I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah.
Under the House of Blues.
Dude. You gotta tell that story. Because so if you don't know, the House of Blues is an underground parking lot.
And in Chicago.
Yeah, in Chicago. And it's super seedy. It's like really bumpy gravel. The buses barely fit. There's rats everywhere. And Sean had a really fun experience down there.
There's literally rats having parties.
Yeah. Dude, we were like, because I think we had a day off. And so like, and at this point, I wasn't like, I hadn't been really drinking when I first started the tour. But like, I was just like, you know what, fuck it. Like, I'm going to have a few drinks. And then ended up being like more than a few drinks. And I was like, just cooked at this one night after Chicago, because we had a day off. And I remember just being, it was like 4 a.m. or something. And I'm on the bus. And I'm like, hey, I need water, dude. I need water. And there's no water in the crew bus. And I remember being like, where's the water? And someone's like, band bus. And I'm like, okay. And I was like, you know what, guys, I'm going to get us all some water. And I go out there and I see this dude like walking dead, literally. And he's down under this parking garage, but he's like 100 feet away from me. And he's just like staggering around, like literally like a zombie. And I notice him and I'm like, oh, whatever. And I go into the bay of the band bus and I'm digging around in there for water. This fucking guy materialized. Like, I don't know. From the way he was staggering, I don't know how he covered that much ground that quickly. But he was just, like, there. And he was just like, ah! And I remember being like, I am so dead. Like, I'm dead. No one's going to hear me scream. Because, like, it's like, you can't hear shit in those buses or outside of those buses. So I'm like, I just started running with all this water in my hands. And, like, I was like slamming the buttons of that bus door to pound the code in. And he's just approaching me so quick and just like frothing at the mouth and shit. And somehow I got the door open and he was reaching in. I just slammed the door on him. And then everyone like was like unaware of like my near death experience in there. And I was like, damn, I nearly just got like eaten like alive out there. And everyone's just like, that's Chicago, baby.
Yeah, that's how it goes.
Yeah, man. That's literally what happens under that, in that fucking den down there.
I remember too, that same day we were loading in and a cop rolls up on us.
Yep.
He goes, sup guys, how you guys doing? Gonna, you know, party tonight or anything? We're like, no, we're good. He's like, well, just so you know, we don't give a fuck in Chicago. The cops aren't gonna stop you. Just do whatever you want to do. Have a good time, man. I'm like, can I get your badge number just for like clarification on that?
Are you actually a cop or?
Yeah. I have a picture of that somewhere.
Yeah.
Dude,
yeah.
What the hell?
He literally said, do whatever you want, man. We don't care here. Have fun.
I always heard that with LA. It's like you could get away with a lot in LA because they're looking for crackheads and shit. But it's like Chicago sounds like a whole nother level to that.
It's a whole other level there.
Way more condensed. Yeah, a whole different game.
I'm telling you, man, those rats. They're not these normal rats. They're like gangster rats down there.
Oh, yeah. You got Master Splinter, dude.
Yeah.
I've told this before. That was the first tour I ever did was in a van. And I got left in Chicago because I couldn't go into the venue because I was too young. And I was supposed to run sound. And I sat in a van till like 3 a.m. bar close and just watched these massive Chicago rats, like the size of cats, just like running back and forth in front of the van.
Oh, man, dude.
Middle of winter, just like huddled up in the van, like on the seat, just like hearing rats run around.
That's gnarly.
Fucking super gnarly, dude. I stayed in Starbucks till it closed and then just like sat in the van, just like shivering.
Dude, I think that's the scariest part about, I mean, I think touring in general, but for some reason, the bus one gets me. It's like, dude, if you're not on that bus, when that bus is rolling, you are gone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're oil spotted.
Get down, kid.
You are stuck. It's definitely not a leave no man behind situation.
No.
I mean, as Chris Vick found out with his cameras, when you're 100 miles away from venue and your camera's not there, it's gone. It's gone.
She gone.
Yeah.
She gone.
Don't leave stuff behind on the road. There's good advice too. Because one of my favorite Drake stories is once he came, it was before Carlos was with us, and he came to Kristen and I and said, hey, so I left my phone charger on the stage like 3 shows ago. Do you know why that is? Like, did you guys find that? I'm like, dude, I don't even know where the fuck I was 3 days ago. Are you fucking kidding me? I have no clue.
Oh my God. Well, I just wish we could be fucking, you know, back on the road.
Yeah, I wish you could be face to face. Give you a big old hug.
I know, man.
Back on stage right.
Yeah, back on stage right.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. That's nice.
Well, fuck. On that note, I think it's time to wrap this up.
Let's wrap it up.
This has been amazing. Thank you so much, Sean, dude. I fucking miss you. It's so good to see your face and talk to you again. It's always a pleasure.
I know, buddy. Thanks for sharing all those stories and influences.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you guys. That was actually really kind of fun to walk back down all that stuff and remember things. So, you know, I appreciate you guys.
Taking us down memory lane.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you guys having me on. And, you know, hopefully there'll be more in the future. And hopefully I'll have some more stories.
Oh, that for sure will be. So, with that, please rate, subscribe, check us out at Stage Right Podcast on Instagram. And we'll see you guys in the next one.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Remember to give us a like, subscribe, and a follow on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and on Instagram at Stage Right Podcast. Thank you.